This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Russia has detained an American citizen in Moscow on accusations of spying, according to Russian state media. Reuters' Vanessa Johnston reports.
Russia says it has detained an American citizen over alleged espionage activities and opened a criminal case against him, the latest twist in an increasingly tense relationship between Washington and Moscow. Russia's FSB State Security Service said the American was detained on December 28th. Now, under Russian law, he could face a prison sentence between 10 and 20 years. Earlier this year, the U.S. leveled its own accusations of spying against a Russian national, that case resulting in a guilty plea for Maria Butina in a deal with prosecutors.
The partial government shutdown and U.S. President Trump now acknowledging that not all of the barrier that he wants to build along the Mexican border would be a concrete wall he has long called for. He said an all-concrete wall was never abandoned, as he has reported by the media. Trump contended in a Twitter remark that he was disputing John Kelly, his outgoing White House chief of staff, who said in an interview over the weekend that Mr. Trump's administration discarded the idea of a solid concrete wall early in Trump's two-year tenure as president. But Mr. Trump conceded that some areas will be all concrete, but the experts at the Border Patrol prefer a wall that is see-through. Mr. Trump won cheers of his most ardent loyalists as his successful 2016 presidential campaign had a call for a solid concrete wall along the 3,200-kilometer U.S.-Mexico border, saying Mexico would pay for it. Find more at voanews.com. This is VOA News. Outgoing U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis is giving some final advice to U.S. troops and the Defense Department's civilian employees to maintain their faith in America and continue to stand by the country's allies. He says that the department's leadership, civilian and military, remains in the best possible hands, Mattis wrote in his official farewell message Monday, his last day on the job. And Monday's letter comes as Mattis prepares to relinquish his office to Deputy Secretary Pat Shanahan, who is becoming acting defense secretary as of January 1st. While it was not the first time the two men disagreed on policy, for Mattis, the Syria decision represented a breaking point, which is why he eventually decided to leave the office. Mattis also warned the president that the U.S. must be resolute in unambiguous in their approach to countries whose strategic interests are increasingly in tension with the United States. Officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo counted millions of votes Monday, the day after an election marred by massive irregularities, including alleged errors in the voter roll, technical problems, and delayed or missing polling materials. The poll drew immediate criticism for its lack of organization, allegations of vote rigging and malfunctioning equipment, while both presidential frontrunners said that they were confident of victory. Critics said that this is a messy situation and was part of a plan to all along to keep the ruling coalition firmly in control. President Joseph Kabila has remained in power more than 2 years past the end of a second-term mandate. Observers from the Catholic Church Observation Mission said the poll had been relatively calm, but the mood in the capital was tense, and local media reported that internet access had suddenly been cut for an untold number of residents. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News. And find more at voanews.com.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today's Tuesday, New Year's Day 2019, and here are some of the stories we are covering. As vote counting continues in the Democratic Republic of Congo, the candidates are interpreting partial results for themselves.
This morning at 7:30, we had received 33% of the general voting information coming from our observers. And Felix Tshisekedi had 43%, Fayulu 23%, and Shadary 5% only.
Abraham Luakabwanga is the National Secretary for Communications of Felix Tshisekedi's opposition UDPS. President Ali Bongo addresses Gabonese on video, his first since suffering a stroke, but an opposition official says the video has left more questions than answers. Uganda's president promises to fight corruption in the new year, and Sudanese stage a New Year's Eve protest.
This is another indicator for the Sudanese, because they said that we want to celebrate the new year without the government of al-Bashir in the year 2019.
Mohamed Ali Fazari is a columnist for the Al Akbar daily newspaper of Sudan. Zimbabwe's government increases traffic fines, and Nigeria targets 26 million people in a yellow fever prevention campaign. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Vote counting continues in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Meanwhile, main opposition Union for Democracy and Social Progress, UDPS, says initial results shows its candidate, Felix Tshisekedi, is winning Sunday's presidential vote. Joint opposition presidential candidate Martin Fayulu and President Joseph Kabila's preferred candidate, Emmanuel Shadary, also claim they are winning. Meanwhile, the Electoral Commission is expected to announce official results on January 6. Ibrahim Luakabuanga is the National Secretary of Communications for Felix Tshisekedi's main opposition, UDPS.
Since yesterday at the closing polls, we were collecting information from all our observers on the field. And this morning at 7:30, we had received 33% of the general voting information coming from our observers. And while compiling everything, Felix Tshisekedi had 43%, Fayulu 23%, and Shadary 5% only. That may be the reason why we have now the shutting down of the internet, because they don't want us to be able to collect all the general information.
So you think the numbers that you've collected so far is sufficient to conclude that you have won the presidential election?
This is just a projection. Just think about 33%. And this comes from places where we are weak. We're not talking about the Kasai Central. We're not talking about Kivu, where our partner, Mr. Vital Kamerhe, helped us to do the best work we had.
You are also aware that Martin Fayulu, as well as a ruling party coalition candidate backed by President Kabila, Emmanuel Ramazani Shadary, also claim to have won the election. So is this the case of who shouts the loudest to claim victory?
But you know that's easily a way people have been working in the DRC. We all know, even just take a look at the polls. Just take a look at what was released by New York University or Ipsos recently. On all polls, Felix Tshisekedi was coming ahead. And he had like 15%, you know, ahead of Martin Fayulu. So having a result where he's coming up front with 43%, he's not far away from the real truth. So what I'm saying is we had collected 33 official percent of all the general voters. And it appears that Tshisekedi this morning was still ahead of it. So now the point is, if somebody else is claiming another numbers, we have to compare what are the results from which polling stations. Let's put everything on the table and compare that.
The chairman of the Electoral Commission, Corneille Nangaa, is expected to announce the winner of this election on January 6th. But when do you realistically expect him to do that?
This is the way, you know, the collections of information comes. It's a general rule. At the end of the session, we just count the numbers of bulletins that has been put into the tray and we count them. It's easy. And every single party observers has a copy of it. And the point is who's going to be collect and who's going to work as quick as possible, you know, to find out the main results. This time around, UDPS, such as UNC, we were organized in such a way to get information on time. That's why I can give you the official numbers that we can show to every single person, you know, with the right information.
Ibrahim Luakabuanga is the National Secretary of Communications for Felix Tshisekedi's main opposition, UDPS. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotte from the DRC capital, Kinshasa. Ugandan President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni says his government will this year focus on reducing youth unemployment and on regional trade, security and development. The president also says his government will improve agriculture and increase the GDP of the nation. Mugumi Davis Raka Ridge filed this report from Kampala.
In his end of the year address, President Museveni promised Ugandans that his government will work towards eliminating crime in the country.
In any case, by the end of this new year, our anti-crime posture would be totally different. On top of the vigilance of the public and the promptness of the police, we shall have added the technological means we are developing. Crime will be defeated.
This past year, some top government and security officials were gruesomely murdered in and around the capital, Kampala. More than a dozen women were also killed in or around Kampala. There were also cases of kidnapping in the capital. The president recently inaugurated an ICT CCTV center in Kampala that he said will be used to detect and prevent crime. Mr. Museveni also promised that his ruling National Resistance Movement, or NRM, led government would fight against corruption.
This corruption is easy to defeat for the NRM. It's not a big issue. We are going to crush corruption. Those who allow themselves to betray us and betray the country have themselves to blame. You will see, we are going to clean the public service.
Recently, President Museveni appointed a serving army officer to head the newly established anti-corruption office that will be run through his office. He said the new office will coordinate with the existing anti-corruption agencies in the country, such as the Office of the Inspector General and that of the Auditor General.
I would directly lead the struggle against illegal land evictions. Most of the people being evicted are either the elders I led in the resistance wars or their descendants. They did not abandon the NRA, the National Resistance Army, and I will not abandon them.
President Museveni said his government will provide startup capital and vocational skills to youth in effort to reduce poverty and unemployment.
The government, by supporting youth groups, overnight turns a youth who had no job, who had no property, into a property owner and a job creator. Through grants or low-cost revolving loans, these programs will be expanded. At the same time, the skilling of the youth in technical schools or through special courses will continue.
According to the Ugandan Bureau of Statistics, the country's youth population make up at least 70% of the country. For VOA News, I am Gume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, New Year's Day, 2019. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. A wide range of Sudanese took to the streets Monday to call on President Omar Hassan al-Bashir to peacefully step down. The protesters, led by Sudan's main opposition National Umar Party, included lawyers, doctors, and teachers. They said they don't want President Bashir to be their president in 2019. Security operators used tear gas to disperse the demonstrators. Some of them were arrested, including a prominent member of the Umar Party's political bureau, who is also the daughter of party leader al-Sadiq al-Mahdi. The Umar Party says the government's refusal to accept a petition from the protesters shows the failure of the Bashir administration. Mohammed Ali Fazari is a columnist for the Al-Akbar daily newspaper of Sudan.
It's supposed to be simultaneously with the celebration of the New Year and the 36th anniversary of Sudan independence from the British rule. So this is this has another indicator for the Sudanese, because they say that we want to celebrate the new year without the government of al-Bashir in the year 2019. But unfortunately, the police and the security forces prevented this mass rally to go to their direction, which is about 1 kilometer from the city center to the Republican Palace, to hand over this memorandum urging President al-Bashir to overthrow and say, see, this is 30 years from his rule. Just the Sudanese get more corruption and more suffering from his three decades rule.
Talking about these professional groups, how many of these professional groups organize this protest? And
the Professional Unions Association is including doctors, engineers, teachers, and advocates, higher education workers, and backed by some activists and the youth of Sudan. Also supported by main opposition parties. Their demands also call for a new regime that's to replace this current regime And also they are chanting peaceful, peaceful. That means they don't want to use violence or anything that which has been accused about.
President Bashir called on the security agencies not to attack the protesters who have been protesting in peace. But why is his advice or his call not being listened to by the security agencies? Because in your report and reports that we are getting is that the security agents have been, you know, using tear gas and some of them have been attacking the protesters.
Yes, some people think that there is a double standard in the president's speech because he sometimes prevents his police not to use live ammunition or not use killing people or let them demonstrate in a peaceful or in a civilized way. And at the same time, there is about forces. They refuted that the document that mentioned by Amnesty International, which has earlier said that about 37 people has been killed since the demonstration erupted in Khartoum on 19 December. But despite the fact that the Sudanese president, yesterday he met with his senior police officer, he asked them not to use excessive forces with the demonstrators, but still there are new victims and there is arrest and crackdown was witnessed in many parts of Khartoum. People think that is because the security and the police and the army, they are mixed together in the whole area so that they cannot distinguish who used the excessive force, whether it is the police or the security organs or the army. That's why there is some doubts and think that President Bashir's speech is a little bit vague to be understood, because in other ways people think that he gives them advice to kill when there are some people using violence or using to try to destroy public utilities. They think this is just like a red line to kill those people, as the president's speech they think and has been translated into other activists here in Khartoum.
Mohamed Ali Fazari is a columnist for the Al-Apa Daily Newspaper of Sudan. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotte from Khartoum. Gabonese President Ali Bongo Monday addressed his people, his first since suffering a stroke last October. The 59-year-old Bongo has not been home to Gabon since he fell ill in Saudi Arabia. He is currently recuperating in Morocco. In his New Year's message distributed through social and traditional media, Bongo said he has been through a difficult period, but he said he's getting better and would soon return home. Paul Marie Gonju is the deputy executive secretary of Gabon's main opposition National Union Party. He says the video has left some Gabonese more suspicious about the state of President Bongo's health.
What I can say is just that we waited for this speech of President Bongo, and we are coming out of this stage upset because, again, it was like the first video about him. It was something not real for us. The man who spoke to the Gabonese people was not, in fact, for us, real, and the Gabonese don't believe is Mr. Bongo who was speaking.
What do you mean the people don't believe? Did something happen to the president physically?
They believe that it was a montage, and it's just a makeup. And if Mr. Bongo was in the chat for speaking today, why is that in Gabon? And why we see him 3 weeks after he met the king of Morocco? This thing is not making things clear. And Gabonese are coming out of speech more suspicious about the president's health. It's not just real. I mean, that's all I can say.
According to a quote, the president said that it is true that I have been through a difficult period, as sometimes happens in life. But today, as you can see, I am better and I'm preparing to meet you again. What do the people think about that?
Okay, I'm going to make it simple. We are waiting for Mr. Bongo to come back in Gabon. Then we expect him to address people or live. Like that, we can see if it's the real President Ali Bongo. Second, opposition parties ask for a health commission to go and check his ability to be president. We wrote to the Prime Minister and to the President of Constitutional Court, and we expect those authorities to follow on the letter we sent to them. And like that, we will be sure of his ability to govern Gabon. And second, we wait for him to come back in Gabon and then address the people, you know, live, and then we can see for sure.
The presidential spokesman, Ike Ngouni, said that the speech the president delivered was proof that the president was fully recovered.
He's saying the same thing every time since October 24th. He's saying the same thing. And it's 2 months since he has started speaking about President Harris. But we don't see anything that can be real about his health condition. So we are not waiting for him to tell us the truth.
Paul, thank you very much again. And please, let me say Happy New Year to you.
You too, Jim.
Paul Marie Gonjou is the Deputy Executive Secretary of Gabon's main opposition National Union Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Libreville. Motorists in Zimbabwe are ringing in the new year by toasting or cursing increased traffic fines, which are expected to raise needed revenue by the cash-strapped government, as well as reduce car accidents. As Colombo's Mavunga reports, motorists say they want President Emmerson Mnangagwa's administration to first fix the dilapidated roads.
Come January 1, if motorists here break a traffic law, they will pay as much as $700 for offenses such as speeding, drinking and driving, overloading their vehicle, or driving without a license. The previous maximum penalty was just $30. President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government says the move, besides raising revenue, will reduce fatalities on the roads. But Stanford Chigwedere, a public transport driver, says he's against the idea because casualties on Zimbabwe's roads are not caused by bad driving alone.
My roads in Zimbabwe are bad.
Roads in Zimbabwe are now useless, he says. They want to fine us. We pay tax, but they are doing nothing. Now they are increasing fines to as much as $700. Where will that money go to? All roads are full of potholes. We are giving them lots of money. We are not causing deaths or accidents on the roads. It is the police chasing motorists that cause accidents because we'll be on these bad roads, says Chigwedere. Critics say the move is a desperate measure to squeeze money from an already overburdened citizenry. Clever Mundau says he's for the new traffic fines being introduced by the government.
I think maybe the responsible authority have got views. Maybe they want to ensure that the roads are going to be okay. So they are going to do something to make sure that the roads are okay. So let's just give them time.
According to the Traffic Safety Council of Zimbabwe, major causes of road accidents include speeding and lack of discipline. Obio Chinyere, the head of the government agency, says fines by themselves will not work.
It's not only the fines when you look at road safety. There are a lot of other instruments we can actually use. Yes, the fines is something else, but you also have to bring in education. You also have got to bring in roadworthy vehicles and also unforgiving roads. We are saying, yes, you might make an error as you drive, but if you move out of the road, it shouldn't be a death sentence. The road should be able to forgive you. Once you leave that road, you are gone.
Narrow roads have also been an issue, causing some motorists to swerve and get into accidents. The government says it is embarking on a program to create four-lane roads as the current infrastructure has become dangerous after years of neglect. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Nigeria's campaign to vaccinate more people against yellow fever appears to be making headway. The government is partnering with the World Health Organization, WHO, Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, and the United Nations International Children's Emergency Fund, UNICEF, to immunize more than 26 million people. It is the second phase of Nigeria's preventive campaign after a yellow fever outbreak in September 2017. Timothy Obiezu has more from Abuja.
This vaccination center in Nigeria's capital, Abuja, is swarming with people. It is the second phase of Nigeria's preventive campaign after a yellow fever outbreak in September 2017. They're all here to get the yellow fever vaccine. Deborah Adichie is here with her daughter.
We've learned it's killing people, so we don't have to wait for it to happen to us. That is why we came to collect the vaccine, and I brought her to collect the vaccine.
8.7 million people were vaccinated during an initial campaign in January and February 2018. This phase covers six states, including the Federal Capital Territory. Obiora Ezebilo is UNICEF's yellow fever coordinator. He has been monitoring the process.
So the campaign has been very good. We started the campaign on 22nd of November. We're implementing in Borno State, we're implementing in Niger, in Kebbi, Sokoto, Plateau, and actually all the states have completed, and the records we are having is really, really very good. As of now, we're having maybe a coverage of above 95%.
But Nigeria's routine yellow fever immunization rate is low. Only 4 in 10 children aged 2 years and older are immunized. Experts say a high enough percentage of the population must be immunized to contain the spread of the disease. Nigeria hopes to reach that point in 5 years. About 39 million people between 9 months and 44 years old are expected to be vaccinated by the end of 2018. Program Manager for Immunization in Abuja, Salomi To, says the effort is making an impact.
Government of Nigeria, in collaboration with partners, international organizations, especially the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization, which is shortly known as GAVI, they have earmarked a lot of money in supporting this campaign. They purchased the vaccines, they provided logistics, and there's a national plan to cover this age group across the country. It's divided into phases.
Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Vote counting continues in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And meanwhile, main opposition Union for Democracy and Social Progress, UDPS, says its initial results show its candidate, Felix Tshisekedi, is winning Sunday's presidential vote. And that's it for this Tuesday, New Year's Day, 2019 edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butter in Washington, wishing you a Happy New Year.
Happy New Year! Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in for a thrilling ride through some of Africa's greatest hits from 2018. Get fresh news from the continent on what's trending right now.
It is the dance of the century. Everybody is dancing to it. And there would have been no Shaku Shaku dance without this song, Led Bagbe, coming from Mr. Real.
And meet vocalist Gino Sitson, who joins me in the studio with brand new music coming out in 2019.
Bilam is a love song. Bilam means in Medumba, one of the numerous Bamileke languages from West Cameroon. It means follow me.
Don't miss it. Music Time in Africa, this Sunday, 15:05 and 20:05 UTC.